You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
This is Overdrive.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's mailing in Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
It's mailing in Friday. With Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Feeling good on a Friday afternoon. Positive Friday continues. Forget mailing it in. The boys are on fire today because the Toronto sports fan is loving life. The Jays are going to be back in town soon. The Raptors have won four in a row. The Leafs are 7-1-1 in their past nine. Rookies are scoring points. Vets are putting up numbers. Backups are picking up wins. And people are starting to circle the Montreal Canadiens and or the Ottawa Senators, because if the playoffs were to begin tonight, Leafs in Ottawa, maybe if they were to begin on Sunday after Ottawa plays Montreal tomorrow.
Montreal Canadiens have had such a weird season. I mean, going from the start to not being able to do anything in the win column, and then firing the coach, and then the coach takes over and they're doing well, and then they're crappy, and then they do well, and it's bizarre.
I want Leafs Habs so badly I can't even begin to tell you. It would be such a dream come true for Leaf fans just to be able to experience that. That's all I'm talking about. I'm not sitting here guaranteeing a series win or anything like that. Listen, the Leafs haven't beaten the Habs in like 3 years. They've lost 14 times in a row. There's no reason to want Montreal based on their past history.
Well, you know they'd break that streak.
They would win a game. Would win a game. But it's about the experience. The whole year has been foreign territory for Maple Leaf fans. Mm-hmm. Cherry on top would be a series against Montreal. That just would be an incredible experience. And if they were to beat Montreal, whew, look out.
I think the realistic matchup, unfortunately, will be Ottawa, because Ottawa's got a tough schedule coming up. They got a five-game road trip. You just lost a top four defenseman who's probably not going to be available to your top pairing defenseman, but he is a top four for sure. Like, they're a resilient group, but going into last night, I think they had three home games and seven road games left. So it is going to be a bit of a tough stretch. But head-to-head against the Habs tomorrow night, it's going to be a hell of a game. And if they end up doing it, it's just there's still a little bit too much schedule for me to be setting those matchups yet. I'd like to do it in the last five games.
Well, but here's the thing that is going to happen. One of Ottawa or Montreal will finish first, and the other team will finish second.
Probably, yeah.
I don't see Toronto taking off to the point where they pass one of those two teams.
So you're saying first or second just up for grabs.
And right.
It's just a matter of who you
face. It's who it's going to be. So if you think the Leafs can hold on to that third spot, you're playing one of those two teams.
Sure. You're right. And
right?
It's a fair assessment or an assumption.
And we're asking people on Twitter today, if the Leafs were to hold on to that third spot, who would you want to see them play in the first round? 61% voting Ottawa, 39% Montreal. Either way, if I told you 6 months ago the Leafs would be in a position like this, you'd sign off every single day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a fun team. They're winning games. They're winning the games they're supposed to win. They're competing in the games where maybe you thought it was all going to come back to reality for them.
Yeah.
And you just have to be... You have to be pretty proud if you're a Leaf fan right now, man. I mean, you got to be really excited about what's going on.
How can you not be after what's been going on here they did get in the lockout shortened season and went to game seven against Boston, but before that, no thanks. And they're doing it with young players, so you know that if they get in this year, which they should, and they talked about building an organization, a franchise where they want to get in and get to a point where they're competitive and have a chance every year. And that's what they're trending towards. So you got to be positive about this.
I agree. Be positive. Soak up as much as you can. And surprise some people, too. That's what you can do.
They've already accomplished that. They've already surprised, yeah, I think everyone in the hockey world.
I didn't think that D-Corps could get them in the playoffs.
No. I mean, 2 weeks ago, no one was certain. A week ago, no one was certain. It's still not guaranteed, but the fact that they're at 85 points with nine games left, I don't think many people saw that coming.
No.
Let's bring in Ray, and Ray Ferraro on Overdrive is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. What is happening, Raimondo?
I am laughing at you, Hayes. You still have a little bit of the old, there might be a pothole around the corner, don't you? You just can't. You can't buy in full yet.
I can't.
Well,
I'll
we
admit
were talking about the percentages, Ray, and there's some percentage that they're like 84.7% getting in. But you know the percentage of them winning that game 7 against Boston. It was, at one point, it was 99.99.
But you guys are talking about, you know, they're at 85 points and they're rolling along here. And Hayes is like, well, they should get it because you just can't. That's a lifelong of leafdom.
Exactly,
right,
man.
There.
It is.
You can't erase it.
It's so true, man. It's not been good. It's been a very dark time here in Toronto, and that can really warp your mentality.
It's not good, eh?
It's not good, right? It's not. I mean,
now I like everybody else was like, there's not a chance this defense can hold up. And every time I watch it hold up, I'm like, well, I got to chew on that one again because I just didn't see it. Like, I figured somewhere along the line, Polak and Hunwick would get in over their head a little bit. And I didn't believe that Gardner was going to be as good as he has been as many times as he has been. I always kind of wait for him to go back to the old, you know, give one up, you know, give two up, get one, you know, like that. And I didn't know that Carrick was going to be good enough. How would you know that Zaitsev was going to be able to do what he's done, and what's been a, you know, kind of a really interesting year for Riley, the six of them have kind of, they've held it together. It's been really kind of neat to watch. I just didn't see it. I didn't see this team as a playoff team, not yet. And they've got enough of those younger guys that are going to be the core of this team for the next 6 to 10 years, and you go, wow, that's for some really, really good starting blocks to build with.
And that really is the biggest difference between what we're dealing with right now and what we were dealing with 2, 3, 4 years ago. If, for whatever reason, this doesn't work out for them, no one's going to be sitting there saying, blow it up, or I knew they didn't have the right formula here, or that was inevitable with the previous teams. By the end of the year, people are going to hate Phil even more than they already did, or Dion, or blame them even more than they already did. It's not going to happen with this current group. But you mentioned the defensive core, and we continue to look back on that loss in Florida as a real turning point, because since then they're 4-0-1. But if you dig deeper, what really came out of that game was Babcock finally looked at it and said, I got to break up my defense pairings. And he has. He's got Zaitsev playing with Gardner, Carrick playing with Riley, and that has really, for whatever reason, sparked the defense core. And those players in particular, they look a lot more comfortable than they did the previous 10, 15 games.
Well, they do for sure. The other, you know, I don't really have the numbers or anything, but at that time, you know, when they had that train wreck, you know, Anderson got his game back together. He's really, I think it's his last, is it 9 or 10 starts? He's just had the one clunker, the one when he got pulled in Florida. And it was like him going hand in hand with the D, or is it the other way around? I'm not really sure, but they found a way to not need 4 goals a night to win. And that to me is paramount as they get into this last, you know, what is it, 9 games, and then whatever they're going to get in the playoffs. That you're not going to score 4 or 5 goals a game. Yet now they've got enough people up front that you can't shut one guy down. You can't shut 2 guys down. They'll get something from somewhere else. And if these guys can hang in there, all of a sudden you're like, could they actually be a scary team? And I think the answer is, why not? They're outside of a couple teams. They're as good as everybody else.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, does anybody really scare you besides Pitt and Wash? And who the hell knows what Wash can do?
Yeah, like, if... Okay, so Pittsburgh's somehow still putting points on the board really regularly with, well, Noodles, you saw last night. I mean, what was their defense like?
Skin and bones. That's right. Yeah, I looked at that team last night, and it looked like it was on life support, but they still find a way.
So if they go into the playoffs and they don't have, you know, the, you know, Letang's not there, and you're getting only Mata back for a couple games or Daly back for a game or two, like, how good are they going to be? How good can they be? What if they get bounced out in the first round? And then you're, now you got one less team to worry about if you're Toronto, or everybody else for that matter too. They've done it it's been an amazing season. I would say, to me, that the three teams that have surprised me the most this year, getting as far as they have, although the season's not even over, Edmonton, Toronto, and Columbus. I just didn't see it. I didn't see it yet for them, and they've all put together pretty unbelievable years.
They were all bottom five last year.
Yeah. And now they flip that quick. By the way, you got to give the Avs some credit. It's tough to give up five in a period.
No kidding, man.
4-2, like that.
They're brutal. Like they're honestly one of the sorriest teams you've,
Ray,
you've
like
seen.
That is Atlanta, like, is it not?
It's almost like a flashback of, like, you'd be zipping along. Well, I don't know if you're ever zipping along, but you're up in the game and you're like, you give up a goal and you can almost feel everybody shudder and go, oh God, here it comes. And then you just get pummeled and you can't stop it. Like, it's hard to give up five goals in a period.
Well, we were talking yesterday about teams that had some talent and were never able to shut the door. We talked about Edmonton for so many years. There's actually some good players there. They don't have a great defensive core, but that's flat out embarrassing.
In Colorado, you're
yes.
saying? Yeah. They should be capable of like 55 points or something like that in a season.
The crazy part is they're kind of near the cap.
That is,
and they've got contracts signed for a long time for like six guys.
That is frightening.
You know, it's one thing if you're no good and you're, you know, transitioning into, you know, into your younger players, but they've got what's supposed to be their core signed. I think those guys through 2021. When I was doing the Florida game, they've got eight players signed through the 21-22 season.
Yeah, it's
surprising. You look sometimes like that and you go, man, they're married to this team.
That's a big problem. That's a significant problem. And they'll be a team that people will be focused on come the summer. They're just riding out the season. But as for what's going on here, we got a poll question up, which I'm reluctant to continue to bring up because of the way I was acting earlier in this segment, where there's still a little bit of trepidation in terms of what the Leafs are doing. But as it currently stands, they're in third spot in the Atlantic, and they've got a bit of a buffer here on Boston. They're three up with a game in hand, six up on Tampa. If it ends that way and they finish third, who do you think they should want to pick? If they could hand pick one of these two options, who would you take for the Leafs, Ottawa or Montreal?
I would take Ottawa, just because Carey Price would bother me. You know, like, just that almost alone would bother me. Not that Ottawa would be an easy out, because they won't. And look at how every time you think they're going to go left turn, sideways, crash, they don't. Carey, I don't know. I would never pick a series where you've got that sitting at the end of the ice. I just, that would just scare me.
That's
yeah. What is everybody else thinking?
That's what I said. Carey Price is the only goalie that I can see in the game right now. Bobrovsky could be one too, but that could actually steal series and maybe steal a little bit more. Like, not just one series, like make a run here. That's the guy who terrifies me.
Now, and Montreal's got enough of their own problems. I mean, they can't figure out where to play Galchenyuk. Is he in the middle? Now he's on the wing with Shaw. I can't imagine that's a long-term solution for them. Is there, you know, is Markov going to hold up through the grind of a playoff? Or, you know, are they going to get any secondary scoring? Or is it Pacioretty and Radulov and nobody else? I mean, their power play, I don't know what it did last night. Well, they couldn't have done too much, but they were 1-for-21. In the previous nine games, and then all of a sudden they got enough problems. So maybe Ottawa's bend don't break might be worse to play. But still, Price is a great equalizer to me.
Well, and he's owned the Leafs for 3 years. I mean, the Habs have beaten Toronto 14 times in a row, which is just absurd.
But don't you think with that, eventually,
that's what I'm thinking.
Turn, right?
That's why, and I would take Montreal, and I'll say this, I'll make my case on both sides. One, from a fan standpoint, just simply the experience, I'll take that every day of the week. It's never happened in my lifetime. The last time the two teams met in the playoffs was like 1979. So the idea of Toronto Montreal playing in a playoff round would be so magical. It would just be spectacular. I would take that every day of the week, regardless of how it all played out. But I also think the psyche, it would almost be like a few years ago when the Leafs were playing Boston. Not to the same extent. They would not be considered as big of underdogs as they were in that series. Everyone had Boston in 4 or 5 that year. Like, everyone thought Boston was just going to steamroll Toronto, and it ended up going to 7, and we know what happened in the final period. But I think the Leafs kind of fed off the idea that they were underdogs. I think it would be more of a coin flip, Toronto and Ottawa. I think because of Price and because of the 14-game winning streak, the Leafs would really be underdogs. And I think that might benefit them a bit, just based on the way this whole season has played out, where I think that's kind of been a part of their code, that no one is banking on them to do anything, and they keep shutting people up.
Well, it's kind of fun when nobody thinks you can do anything. You know, like when everybody doubts you all the time. It's kind of fun when you keep making them believe. And yet, when you get into the playoffs, it's like, you know, something has to happen for you to make you believe in each series. And if you find it, you can beat anybody. In most cases, unless you're just not a good enough team. But you can't make that case that they're not good enough to beat Montreal or they're not good enough to beat Ottawa. They can beat them. If they find something early in a series that they makes them believe, they're not an underdog big time to either of those guys. And I don't think so anyway. I mean, they've won in a couple of games that have been pretty aggressive lately, which would be a little concern to me to see if they can do that because they're young and, you know, and highly skilled, but they don't seem to back away. And I think that shows another side that Toronto fans should be pleased about. Why wouldn't they be? Like, their teams try to run them around, they score on the power play, or they move the puck quick enough that they don't get run out of the building. A team wants to skate with them. My God, they'll love that. They'll take that anytime. All right? Like, now if your goalie holds up, which he looks like he's going to, then you got a team that maybe everybody's worried about you instead of you being worried about them.
Well, there's truth in that, too. And just the electricity of both buildings would be incredible. Leafs, Habs in the playoffs, it would just be absolutely insane. And who knows, maybe someone gives Carey Price a whack and his finger falls off, and then the Leafs are rolling along.
Okay,
right?
Noodles, what did that look like live? I'm sure you guys have talked about it 5,000 times already.
Honestly, it happened in front of me, but it looked routine. And when
did it? Because it looked like a backhanded baseball swing.
Well, it did. It. I mean, Phil Kessel did it to Hoffman in overtime. Like it, I pointed
right,
the point
up. The point we were
seven.
Trying to make was well, like it happened so many times during a game.
But when Mathot skated by me with his finger bleeding, I thought the nail had popped off because I could see. I thought that the nail was the thing hanging. He skates by you quick, right? So I took a peek and I was on the speaker back to Sam in the truck, and I said, "Yeah, he's bleeding here. Take a look at that." And I just thought the nail had come off because, you know, I'm sure Owen, Ray, you could speak to that. You get a lot of wax on the hand where the nail gets broken, and I've seen it happen on the bench a million times where a guy takes his glove off and the nail's laying there. So that's kind of my initial reaction, right? That's what I saw. And then when I was talking to some people in between the first and second, then I realized it was a lot worse because of the injury, the actual injury, and him being potentially out for a while.
I don't know how it's not noticed as a penalty to begin. I mean, the guy
should have
got
been a penalty.
Puck.
Yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
I mean, like those that are saying it's a suspension, not a chance. But I thought it was bad enough when I watched it. Like, you know, I'm just sitting there on my couch and I'm watching it and I go, whoa, like if I notice that, it seems like it's more than a minor penalty.
So you're not talking about the injury. You're talking the whack by Crosby in general.
Yeah. Well, the injury, how are they going to know that?
Right.
Like the fact that there's no penalty, like, how is that even? I mean, I guess we, hell, I did it all the time, and people did it to me. You always whack at people's hands.
Yeah, and Ray, yeah. Since the rules have changed, you don't hook in the hands anymore. You give them that little whack.
Right. The hook in the hands is gone for sure.
That's
an automatic. That's almost more automatic a penalty than you know, the butcher half swing.
Well, that's what I was kind of getting to at the start of the show is, If it's become an epidemic in the National Hockey League, because we are seeing hand injuries, Johnny Gaudreau, Kyle Turris, I'm sure you've talked to Kyle Turris and Bobby Ryan. Like, there's a lot of guys, and it goes right through the league, that guys are getting whacked on the hands a lot more. And it's funny, you can whack on the hands and get away with a slash, but you can break the guy's stick, and it's a penalty.
That's crazy, isn't it?
And Dave Poulin pointed that out on the panel last night. He said, If Crosby slashes his stick and breaks it, that's a 2-minute penalty for sure. He slashes his hand, and we saw what happened, and it's a judgment call. And unfortunately, I wasn't trying to defend Crosby, or I wasn't trying to not defend him. It's just a play that happens all too often in today's game, and maybe that's something that has to be dealt with league-wide.
Well, I don't know why, like, you know, the only way a rule ever gets changed or gets focused on is if enough teams lose players and then everybody kind of becomes an advocate for, okay, look, I'm tired of losing my player here. But when it happens to one guy or just another guy and, you know, the owners can't agree on anything, then nothing happens. I would think there would be some agreement that, hey, maybe we should take a closer look at this. Like, it's happening, as you say, it happens a lot. And now guys are missing weeks. You know, they're not going to the bench and getting a new stick. They're missing weeks here or a month with a broken finger. And what if that's the difference between your team in or out? That's millions of dollars.
Yes.
Well, like, if they call all the shots, they're going to be guys in the penalty box unless they start looking at this like headshots. That's the only way to get their attention.
If you're whacking at somebody's hands and they call you and they call you and they call you, eventually you're going to go, okay, that's stupid. I can't do that anymore.
It's just like when they changed the rules in 2004 when they're like, guys, any little, you touch a guy, it's like penalty box. And slowly over time, guys learn.
You just stop, right? You just go, this is, because I can't, the coach is telling me I can't play you because you're always in the penalty box. Like, it gets figured out pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, and you would think players on both sides would agree to it, almost like a truce, right? Like Sid, probably in a candid moment, he'd say, yeah, that's a penalty. I should have got a penalty there. I whacked him on the hand. But he'd also probably say, it happened to me 15 times last night.
Yeah,
so.
I was talking later or earlier, Ray, that Phaneuf stepped up on Crosby in the neutral zone and gave him a whack and a cross check in the forearm, you know, the follow through. Like, it happens. I think what's happened here is, because there's high-profile players involved, it's become more under the microscope.
Oh, it's way more magnified.
And
oh, yeah, for sure.
And what happened, like, if it's become an epidemic throughout the league, then they have to be reactive to it. And I'm still on my high horse about hitting from behind. I think that's an epidemic in the league. I think it's awful and has to be dealt with before we're talking about a really bad injury. But slashing on the hand has become, I don't know if it's become accepted, but we're seeing a lot more injuries this year.
Well, don't you think, though, like, we're going to see more of it, of course, as everything gets focused in as we get closer to the playoffs and into the playoffs. And if there, I don't know about you, but if, you know, oh, I'll ask, because, you know, we played forward, but if guys are whacking more frequently around your hands, would you not think about doing something with your gloves?
Yes. Bobby Ryan, didn't he come out the other day say that he's going to try different gloves next year? Because,
well, like, at the end of your hand, okay, so at the end of your fingers on your glove, it's just material.
Yeah, it's just
leather. And I always wondered, why is there no protection on that? But it's because it didn't quite feel comfortable, right? Yeah. So you're like, out of hell with it. I don't want to be uncomfortable. And then you break your finger.
Well, it's no different than sticks. I mean, no one wants to use a wooden stick because it sucks. But it wouldn't break on you. You know what I mean? But yeah. So people, players are like, whatever, forget it. When you're in the.
But don't you think you'd go to your glove company and go, hey, like, can we come up with something here over the end of my finger? Because if you're Mark Mathot, you go, because the end of my finger is now hanging off. Yeah. And that sucks. Well, I don't know. I would think like it's. It's unless they decide they're going to call these things, I would be. It might sound a little wimpy, but I'd be trying to find a way to protect my hands because I got the puck a lot, and one of the ways they're going to get it from you is to carve your hands up if nobody's going to call it.
Ray, this is another thing I said to Brian and Jeff off the air, and this may sound bad, but if guys sell it more. I'll give an example. Soshnikov hit Bergeron from behind the other night, and Bergeron's nose was bloody. If Bergeron just lays there and he comes up or he needs help off, it's a major and a suspension. Last night, if Mathot gets a slash in the hands and his legs all of a sudden go numb, like we see in other sports, instead right. of grinding it through and going after Crosby, and then his glove comes off and he shows everyone his fingers hanging there. If he falls down on that play and throws his glove off and shows everyone his hand, like, we're not having a conversation. It's called immediately right there, and we're maybe talking about a suspension. But that's now we're getting into
that's the thing.
A
you want diving?
Soccer mentality.
Yeah, essentially, do you want people diving and selling it? Like, that's
but the fact is, like, That should be a penalty, whether he dives or doesn't. I'm with you that he could have dropped his stick and made it look a lot.
He flailed
a lot
around.
Worse.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But it still should be a penalty. Well, can you imagine, like, for all the Pittsburgh people that are saying, oh, quit whining, could you imagine if it was the other way around and they just lost Crosby for a month with a broken finger?
Oh, no kidding.
It would be brutal. So anytime a play like this happens, I always keep in my head, you have to look at it like you don't care who the player is. Like, you're not cheering for either team and go, if that happened to a guy on my team, what would I think? And in every case, I think the people would say that's a penalty.
Right.
And it's got to be called. And it wasn't. And I would assume the officials probably got the little video clip in there. In their email box today, saying, okay, by the way, this is a missed call, because they always get them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably a lock. Anyway, we'll see. Crosby will keep playing. He's playing this weekend. Mathot won't be playing anytime soon.
They play the Islanders.
That's a big game. Yeah, the Islanders are playing Pittsburgh tonight and then Boston tomorrow.
How about the Islanders? Somehow they seem dead three times. Now they're kind of hanging in there again.
What
and
about
Boston's
Carolina?
Playing the... Hey, wait a minute. They're all of a sudden kind of, they got a little bit of a chance.
I know, it's scary.
And Boston keeps playing everybody back into the pack, which is crazy. I mean, if they do this again, that's,
And you can't blame Julian this time.
Yeah, no, that'll be tough.
Yeah.
They've already punted him.
New material, please, out of Boston. enjoy it this weekend. We'll do it again Monday at 5 p.m.
Talk to you then. Have a great weekend, guys.
Ray on Overdrive is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. They'll get you out of your timeshare guaranteed or give you a complete refund with offices in Toronto or visit timeshareexitteam.ca. Darren Dreger will join us later in the afternoon. We'll get his take on how the league would have reacted to the Crosby hack on Mathot and maybe how the league will approach it in upcoming seasons.
Dreger was there last night.
Right. Get his take on all
Dreger's
that.
Dreger's on fire.
Really?
He said gonads on the air in the opening. I'm not sure if you can say that on TV.
You can say it on radio.
It on radio, but he said gonads. And then he had something else that made actually Duthie stop and laugh out loud. They were laughing on the panel. They couldn't control themselves.
Let's ask the man about it later on.
All right, we'll get an update on that. See what was going on with Dreger last night.
I don't know what was going on last night.
All right, so we'll get you an update on that. Future headlines in an hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. So I was reading about Tony Romo earlier today.
Yes.
It sounds like there's more TV networks chasing him than teams in the NFL.
the hell happened there? Apparently he was supposed to sign somewhere, get traded, and then what is he?
Yeah, originally it was the Cowboys were going to cut him.
Yeah, I thought he was going to Houston. Or...
Houston or Denver were the two teams everyone was talking about. And then especially when Houston traded Osweiler, it was like, okay, here we go. Romo moving up the road, go to Houston. And then Dallas pulled back, and it was like they were going to trade him. And now they haven't done anything, and it's been quiet for 2 or 3 weeks. And it sounds as if Fox was really pushing to make him an analyst, and they were going to give him, like, a great deal, and he was going to be in the booth calling games and be potentially a part of the panel. And now reports are out there that CBS is making a big push.
This guy's going to be a
So he's a mailing media. It in and shutting it down?
He might. I mean, there might be more money for him in the booth.
No. What's he making, 20?
He's making a lot of money.
The booth could probably pay him five, right? 5 to 7?
Yeah, probably about
that. Isn't that what those
guys make? Yeah, give or take. But you don't have to get the crap beaten out of you every Sunday.
He doesn't get run over and separates his shoulder, and how many concussions has he had? And he gets you could probably have a longer career in the booth if he's good at it.
I think he'll be very good.
You think so?
Yeah.
Is he an outspoken guy?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's just a smart guy. He's well-spoken, good-looking guy. He's a quarterback, and that means a lot, right? Yeah. Like, if you played that position.
They know how to break it down, where everybody's going, what everybody's thinking.
Yeah,
Jesse Palmer is a really good analyst, right?
Absolutely. And he played the quarterback position himself, happens to have some bar play.
Yeah, he wasn't a star, though, right, Palmer?
No, not in the NFL. He was a really good college quarterback. He was at Florida, man. He was the original. Well, he wasn't the original Tebow, but I'll bet you his lifestyle around campus was a bit different than Tebow's.
Yeah.
How different would a Saturday night with Palmer be compared to hanging out with Tebow on like a Saturday night?
Yeah, it'd be a lot different.
I would think it would be a bit different.
For sure.
That cat's Rolodex at the University of Florida as the starting quarterback would have been outrageous.
Yes.
Out.
Timmy's?
Palmer.
Jesse Palmer.
Imagine him.
Well, they both went to Florida.
They both went to Florida.
But Timmy Tebow.
But Tebow, you know, he had plans Sunday morning. He had to get up. But I don't get the impression like Tebow was living the lifestyle that others were. I think Palmer probably lived his life and had a pretty good time in Florida.
Boy, would he run the table.
Yeah, he's a great analyst, though. He's absolutely outstanding. And we'll see. I mean, wouldn't that be something if Romo decided, check, please, I'm out. I'll walk right into the booth, make a lot of money, be healthy, take advantage while I can. I kind of hope he doesn't. Like, Romo's one of those interesting guys. You want to see him play. I'd like to see him have some success. I'd like to see him go to Houston and get to the playoffs and maybe do some damage.
Right.
He's got options at the very least.
Well,
I just find it a funny storyline how it went from that to now this. Maybe he's got injury problems that he just went back to a doctor and just said, no, this is not happening. That's the only thing I could think of how it came to this.
But teams are probably
Wasn't even on the radar.
But aren't teams a little bit gun-shy of him right now, too, because of his health?
He's had back and collarbone injuries the past couple of years to the point where, like, he got injured in preseason this year. It didn't really look like he got hit that hard.
Yeah.
You know, like he got taken down and then all of a sudden you're out. So if he can't play, he can't play.
No.
But it makes you wonder why he would want to walk right into this new lifestyle. Like, he's got enough money in the bank. He's got to have 40, 50, 60 million cash in the bank, you would think, if he's smart enough with money. Why not disappear for a few years and then come back?
But don't you want to...
You got to stay relevant.
I was going to say stay relevant. Like, it's hard because I got great advice when I was like 35 years old. And if you're close to retirement, like.
Yeah. Do you know what happens to me and him when other players retire and they want to be this and they're good at it? Me and him are punted.
Well.
Seriously. Because they want a current guy.
They want currency. But you also, what are you going to do from age 35 if you want to live till you're 90? What are you going to do if you have a few bucks? You need something to challenge you.
I'm not disputing that, but...
Yeah, he could take a few years off.
You could take a year or two off. Tony Romo is still going to be a relevant name in a couple of years.
Correct.
especially in like Dallas or something. He could walk into like the Cowboys pre and post game, I would think, at any time he wanted to.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And if you're smart and you're talented, it's the same thing with Rex Ryan. Like Rex has reportedly signed that deal with ESPN, and he's going to walk in and be a part of their Sunday countdown show, and they're going to pay him a lot of money. And I think he'll be very good at it.
But excellent.
I think Rex would be equally as good in 2 years if he disappeared for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Like, if you have the personality, you got the personality.
What if him and his brother were going to do like a Forrest Gump around the world, but bike ride, that tandem bike ride?
I'd check in, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to know the progress?
I would like to see the progress. I think those two are, I mean, they're a little bit of a sideshow, but I would tune in to hear what he has to say, for sure.
Absolutely. Oh, he's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
Rex Ryan, you can love him or hate him, but you've got a take on him. That's what's important.
This is the foot. He likes the
he's
foot.
He's a fan of feet.
This is the foot situation.
He's a big foot guy. Hey, there could be a lot worse fetishes than that.
I understand that, but it was...
It'd be pretty high on my list of the ones I would want to get outed for.
Didn't his girlfriend put me down for a wife foot. Have a tattoo of, like...
Mark Sanchez? Yeah.
I remember that thinking weird. That was a little bit awkward.
That was really weird.
Because what if you're Sanchez? Like,
well, put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
Paul Maurice walks in, and his wife's got... A tattoo of you on her leg.
On his leg.
Like, what would you, how would you break that ice?
I would go to Paul the next day and say, what the hell did I just see?
Yeah. Like, it's.
Why?
It is weird.
It's really weird. Now, it could have been a coincidence. Like, it was a Jets jersey number 6, which was Sanchez. I don't think it was a coincidence. I think she was a fan of Sanchez. And she got a tattoo of him, and Rex was in on it.
That is.
He must have been in on it, right? Like, don't you have to ask your significant other if you're... Like, if I'm going to get a tattoo, I think I would at least notify my wife. I'm going to get a tattoo. This is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
Like, you can't slip that in. Hey, honey, what did you do today? Went and got a tattoo of Mark Sanchez on my leg?
Yeah, like, here's a picture of Sanchez. Put that on my leg, please.
Went to get a tattoo of your starting quarterback on my leg?
That is so weird. Now unless come, it's like an
now come rub
joke.
My feet.
Yeah. I don't. That's really weird.
Come rub my feet.
Jake tweeting, and I forgot about this. Jesse Palmer was on The Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
So he ran the table on there, too.
That show's outrageous.
Man. Outrageous.
It's a stupid show.
It's so dumb. But people tune in. It's but got a lifeline,
guys,
man.
Girls, they're
has
all
anybody ever,
to it.
Like, mm-hmm. actually been married and gone off under the sunset
I
from
doubt
that
it.
Show?
I doubt it.
No, it's so staged and so phony.
But every guy, like, either war, it works both ways. The Bachelor, it's the same thing. They've got all these people in the palm of their hands. They can do whatever they want. Like, my understanding is, and I don't watch the show, but the guy, whoever the Bachelor is, basically is just shooting fish in a barrel for, like, two months.
These girls are throwing themselves at him because they want to stay on the show. They get a rose, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, exactly. Look at us pretending like we don't know
all of the details. I've never watched one episode.
Yeah, I think you get a rose.
I used to watch it. The most embarrassing episodes are the first one where the losers get out of the car, the limo, and they try to make that first impression. And some of them try a dance, and some of them try a move. Like, it's so pathetic.
Mm-hmm. It's cringeworthy stuff.
They get out of the car. Does he
let
them
in the
house?
If you were getting out of the car to impress somebody, what do you think your move would be?
A wave. Hi.
A wave?
How are you?
A wave?
Well, what are you going to do?
What do you mean a wave?
That's a no-go.
All right,
what are you going to do? Touch your toes?
No, this is what happens.
I would.
Imagine a toe touch. Right?
A reverse toe touch. Come to Papa. We got to get out of here, don't we?
Yeah, we might have to move on. That would be one hell of an introduction.
That's aggressive.
Imagine that. You're sitting up. You're the host of the show. You're sitting there with a bachelorette. You're like, all right, let's see who pulls up next.
You're doing a commentary. You're like, what the hell? They would do the Sam Rosen. Oh, my God.
I can't believe I just saw that.
I just saw that.
That guy just got out of the limo and toe-touched and walked into the house. Oh, man. All right, Darren Dreger coming up. Future headlines later in the afternoon. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. A couple people pointing out that I guess the first season of The Bachelor those two got together and they've been married for a long time. They got a kid.
They didn't do it right then.
Yeah.
Or maybe they did do it right and the rest are dopes.
Like, I got daughters. I can't imagine being down to the last four and he's just... How can you be with a dude that you know is with three other girls or four other girls? And he's telling everybody the same thing.
Yeah.
That's reality TV, man.
People eat it up.
Oh, man, it's huge.
Massive.
It's massive. Like, my household, we've constantly got reality TV shows on the go.
I started watching this. I think I told you guys this. I met this guy on a reality show, Jax Taylor, who's on Vanderpump Rules. The guy's a huge hockey fan. Started watching the show, Steph and I. Like, it's crazy. It's a crazy show. They all, like, sleep with each other, and they fight, and they beat each other up. Like, it's...
What's it called?
Vanderpump Rules. It's about a restaurant in L.A., in West Hollywood. And they all... It's... And this Jax is, like, the star of the show, but he is crazy. Like, he... It's almost like he makes stuff up, but he fights with people. It's insane.
A lot of it is scripted. It's all produced.
I'll send him a note and get him to call into the show one day. But
yeah.
He loves hockey. He's from Michigan.
Okay.
He loves the Red Wings. So it probably wouldn't be great to talk hockey with him right now because his team is...
Well, it's funny how different every fan base is handling the final 2 weeks of the season. Like, I follow a couple of people out of Vancouver on Twitter. Yeah. Ben Kuzma's a guy. I think he writes for the Vancouver Province, and Ben's been writing there for a long time. And I had flashbacks because about a half an hour ago, he sent out a tweet updating everyone on the status of Brock Besser, who's a former first-round pick of theirs, who's a college player, and he's going to leave college, and he's going to play, I believe, for Vancouver's minor league team this upcoming playoffs. That's what they've resorted to.
Well, that's what
that was where the Leafs were last year. When's Nylander coming up? What's going on with this guy who's in college? Is he going to come in and play? You know, if the OHL playoffs are over, can Marner come in and play? Like that, it's really depressing because the Maple Leafs did it for like a decade. Right. That was what was on people's mind in the end of March. What are the kids doing in the minors?
Yeah.
What's everyone doing in the OHL or the CHL? Who's going to play at the World Championship?
Coming down the stretch, we were thinking about what kind of guys are available. Like who?
Yeah.
You know what I was doing?
Well, it was the Stamkos watch.
I was waiting for the London Knights to be on TV so I could watch Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
Like that was literally what I was waiting for. Can I watch Marner tonight? That'll be fun.
If we dug up shows from a year ago, right now, calendar year, how many of the conversations were about Steven Stamkos, were about the first overall pick.
Furthermore, how many were actually about the games that were still being played?
None.
I don't think we talked about the games for the final like 20 games of the year.
They would lose 3-1, not cheat you for effort. All right, like you'd say, the Leafs played last night. They lost to whatever, Montreal. 3-1, you know, pretty good game.
That was it.
Garrett
no
Sparks
breakdown.
Started or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And no breakdown and moving on. Like Steven Stamkos tweeted something out or favorited something out. That's what it was. And then we'd have ridiculous hypotheticals from Joe from the Bridge would be writing in all of this you heard from somebody at
what happens if this guy does that and the other guy does this. So I know it was painful. And that's what's happening in Vancouver. It's happening, I'm sure, in Colorado and Arizona.
But at least it's Vancouver's turn in the cycle right now. That fan base at least experienced a final.
They went to a cup final. They were a very good team for a long time.
Right.
Darren Dreger will join us. Future headlines at 6:30. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.